Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to deal with John building a new army. So we're talking about Death Watch. Because
you already built it.
Not done yet. Partially done.
I mean, it's mostly done.
You can always add more. It's a stupid
space. That is, but that is the story of 40K.
Stupid space.
Are you done? You're never done.
I've got, well, actually, my orcs are done because I own every model.
No, you don't.
Multiples. Oh, you're right. You don't have enough loot.
You don't have enough flash kits. We already talked about that. I don't think you have enough tank busters.
Oh, no. I've got old tank. I've got guys holding rockets. I've got 20 guys holding rocket launchers.
That's fine.
Yeah,
exactly. I like old models better anyways.
Anyway, all right. Before we begin, the 40K Lorecast is a weekly podcast releasing every Monday evening in the U.S., focused on the lore of the 40K universe. So if you'd be so kind as to like and comment in the cast, it massively helps us out. Additionally, if you click on the show notes, you'll find a link to our website, the40klorecast.com, where we have our merchandise, Patreon, Discord links, even information on Brad's coaching services.
Wearing the merch right now? Am I not?
Yep.
If you could see me, you could see, I just hurt myself with my own merchandise.
Yep. Brad is...
I'm skilled.
Yeah. Discord, though. I was like bringing it up. Discord is a completely free community that we have available for anyone looking to interact around the 40K universe. We have channels dedicated to providing feedback.
The answer is yes.
Exactly. Yes. Is it feedback on the episodes, lore in general, literature, gameplay, memes, hobbying, online gaming, and lots more. Massive thanks to our mod community there for making it what it is. At time of recording, there's 5,500 members in it. If you're listening to this cast in the distant future and there is no Discord, it's because it got big enough and I burned it to the ground. And the only thing between
you that happening... You're way ready for that, too.
Yeah, the only thing between me burning this thing to the ground and it existing is this group of mods. So thank you guys for doing that, because if your services weren't here, it would not exist.
True story.
Also on our website, we have a link and some information to Brad's coaching services. 30 years of playing in the game and 10 years of coaching players. Brad has become a very good resource for anyone looking to play the game on the tabletop. Brad has worked with players of all experience levels, from brand new all the way through heavy tournament players. So if you want to know more, you can go to our website or our Discord. I'm going to do Brad a favor here. We, after maybe 69 episodes of yelling out his email address, it has become such a problem with him, the spam bots, that...
It, for everybody that has not, I have not responded to, I'm this weekend, after recording this, it'll be after, who cares?
Yeah.
I know, matters. But for people that have not been responded to, I tried to up my spam filters and everything else. And effectively what happened is I got almost no one's email.
So
you know what I still got though? I still got bots.
Yeah.
All the real people got stopped.
Yeah.
And bots still got through.
This is your fault. I mentioned the website earlier. Anyway, the joke kind of is on its course. So the amount of spam hitting Brad just has actually affected his ability to do his job. So we're going to stop yelling it out. I'm not editing the prior casts. So whatever. But anyway, If you're looking for Brad's coaching services, go to our Discord or to our website. Both links are in the show notes.
Or to the Discord, and people will just yell it at you.
It's fine, yeah. No, it's not hidden. So what are the Death Watch? So the Death Watch, much like Custodes in the lore, are light years better than they are on the tabletop.
They also don't... Is this the most difference between tabletop and...
No, Custodes. Custodes and...
Custodes still.
It's Custodes and Harlequins. And Solitaires.
They just play so different from the... Because
they play the most different. You're right. Okay, I see your point. They play the most different.
It's just...
Maybe Harlequins, though, actually. Again, Harlequins in the lore, and that episode's coming up, guys.
They at least show up like they would, kind of.
But Harlequins are in the lore are more of an NPC.
Oh, true.
That's more what I'm saying. Putting them on the tabletop, you're like, why are they...
It's like playing a... If you unlock a boss after you beat him, and then he's terrible, that is what Harlequins are.
Yeah, the Harlequins are there because their Harlequins' main role in the galaxy is to guide things to happening.
And
just on occasion, they have to
end and to talk something. Shit to the Aramon.
That's true, but then they have to end something, and that's when they get real nasty. But yeah, the Death Watch to me don't make a... Sorry, the Death Watch to me on the tabletop are style-wise a disappointment. They actually play well. In 8th edition, they played really well.
They're a good... The thing is, they're a really good army. Yeah. They're just not a lore,
yeah,
even the way they show up.
Yeah, so let's explain this. The Death Watch, they're the special forces of the Space Marines. They're kind of part of the Inquisition, of Ordo Xenos.
Well, they have a different match with them because they come from all chapters.
Yeah, but we'll get into kind of where they are more. But yeah, so the
entire- it's just, but I like to start a little bit with that just because of the fact that that's a big deal of their identity.
Yeah.
Is it's all these people that are coming together. They're sending their best guys. This
that's why it is. They are truly the special forces of the Space Marines. You earn a right to be in the Death Watch, and it is a serious right. Anyone who played Space Marine 2, you know what I'm talking about. It's a massive piece. So where the Death Watch, their entire purpose in the galaxy is to deal with Xenos, okay, whereas the Ordo Malleus have the Grey Knights. The Ordo Hereticus have the Chaos. Sisters. Yeah, have the Sisters. The Ordo Xenos have the Death Watch.
And it's a big deal in this because they get very specific because they only want to fight these things.
Yes, unless playing on the tabletop.
But anyway, which they never fight these things.
Exactly. It's always funny when Death Watch are good. It's because they're a Space Marine army is good. And then so all the Space Marine armies are good. So
they just constantly play Space Marines.
Yeah, play Space Marines. And they
have zero stories of them doing
it. Yeah, but they do in 8th edition, a little bit in 9th, they did some pretty dirty things to Space Marines. Anyway, so what's cool about them is that obviously the Death Watch spend their time fighting Tyranids, Eldar, Jukari, Necron, Orcs, Tau, and Votan TBD if they're Xenos or not. But the part I find more interesting is they actually deal with their main job in the lore is the non-Codex aliens.
100%. And that's why I said they show up so much different than we're going to talk about kill teams in a minute here. But one of the things that Death Watch does in the lore is it's just a group. They send down effectively a platoon of Marines that are specifically kitted out for this. They have sent larger forces, but for the most part,
they don't. And that's because they're dealing with, and what's cool about that is that they're sending, when Brad says they don't send like an armada, they send a few dudes to deal with what is, and we're going to get this more later, a small threat that could become a bigger threat.
Right. They send Rangers, they send SEALs. This is what they do. They're sending a small group of operators down to take care of a problem and get out.
Exactly.
They're not trying to take over. They're not trying to occupy. They're just trying to
solve a problem.
And some of their coolest stories are these non-Codex aliens, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have cool stories about them coming down and they take care of something.
About
when I say take care of,
no longer exists.
Yeah, I was saying it, when I say take care of, it usually means kill. Yeah,
they're the new Dark Angels. So let's talk about the history of the Death Watch first. And they again have a really great history. So M32, the Imperium almost collapsed due to this great orc walk of the War of the Beast.
War of the Beast. I was just saying, the War of the Beast was but this is a big deal, though, because Xenos-wise, we've had, from the Horus Heresy, they're aware, Chaos, we have to do something about that. They're rebuilding the Empire. The Imperium, the Empire, I guess it is the Empire. But in that 2,000-ish year span, it's like 1,500 before we hit that, you have the Imperium kind of sitting on its laurels about Xenos.
Well, and let's talk about why. It's because the Great Crusade only happened because of the fall of the Eldar. And up until basically the whole age of technology, the whole everything up to the Great Crusade, the Eldar were in the galaxy. And the Eldar had been there for a while. They know how to handle all the Xenos. So the Eldar were holding everything
quickly.
In check. Yeah, everything was in check. And what you saw, they did have the Ulanor situation during the Great Crusade, but the orcs specifically, because they were on the right side of the galaxy, I'm not changing
Eastern
that.
Fringe.
They're on the right side of the galaxy. It was hard. They had to go through what was the Eldar part of the galaxy to get to the human part of the galaxy. So they were always
Which just didn't check. Happen. Also, remember, we talked about this in Cast previously. Mm-hmm. The Eldar didn't have to pack up and do things. The Webway meant, hey, there's a problem here. There's not a problem here.
Yeah, and they also could sense it. So if the orcs were moving anywhere, they could see them. So even if the orcs were to hop on a space hulk and jump to the side of the galaxy, the Eldar would see it. And then to Brad's point, they'd go through a webway
and in the height of the Eldar power, they just went, and these were nothing to them.
Yeah, it took no time. They were precogs. So with the Eldar gone, the orcs begin to kind of spread out into the galaxy.
They're testing it. They're like the kid testing, going, hey, is Dad going to do anything about this? Nope, he didn't. Yeah. Nope, he didn't. And then they keep pushing.
And then this was made a lot worse by the effects of the emperor going into the Golden Throne, because you have the end of the Horus heresy. So you've got worlds are devastated, obviously, heresy, but now the emperor is gone.
Which we have to touch on that, though.
Who's in charge now?
Well, it's not even just who's in charge, but as much of a, I'm wearing the sweatshirt, by the way, if you can go to our merchandise, the Bad Dad Emperor sweatshirt, but as much as he didn't tell stuff, the emperor was the best, most powerful psychic in the galaxy. He knew what was going on most of the time.
Yeah, he could deal with it.
And he sent a lot of things where he didn't tell anybody why they were going there, but he knew.
But as we get into the War of the Beast, one of the challenges they have is that the Lords of Terra were fully in charge at this point.
F them.
And Brad, the issue with the Lords of Terra is that the Lords of Terra were never meant to actually be in charge. They were meant to serve as figureheads who did the bidding of the Emperor Malkador. That's it. That's all they ever had to do. And suddenly, you know, they were in charge and they sucked at it. Because the only thing that they did, because they never had to worry before. Any poor decision by a Lord of Terra, while Malkador and the Emperor was around, was really, it was covered.
Lords of Terra were supposed to be the 5-10-year-old boys sitting around, and then they did something and Dad went, quit it.
I think of it as like they're massive trust fund kids who are you know, one day maybe they'll inherit the business, and then one day they suddenly inherited the business, and unlike Tommy Boy, it wasn't funny.
You just ruined the galaxy.
Exactly. So what ends up happening with this is that when the first part of the orc invasion begins, almost all the lords respond with "not my problem," and the reason why is because the orc invasion was beneficial for the majority of the Lords of Terra
because they suck.
Well, let's talk about why though. It's
because they crushed their rivals.
Exactly.
And they knew it was crushing their rivals. And because they're the worst people ever, they just went,
people. They've never existed. This is fictionally in the future.
I'm still angry.
God, you're mad about this. Like, you know,
they suck.
Fine. Anyway, the problem is that this orc invasion gets really moving, and the Lords of Terra are not willing to put any real effort into it because they want to watch their guys fail.
They actually started attacking their
rivals.
Their rivals, they're
weakened to gain less. The bigger problem though is the Space Marine fleets. So the Space Marine army was cut down by like 70%.
At least
at this point in M32. Everyone's gone to. Leman and Korax are in the warp. Gilliman's already been stabbed. I think Dorn was down to just a hand is all that's left of him. There's no Primarchs in the galaxy. So this also, everything about this is building towards a huge problem. To make matters worse, because of the Lords of Terra, the Space Marines were actually a largely independent body. And this is because the Lords of Terra were incredibly focused on improving their own standing and their own power. And all they really cared about was not crossing the Space Marines.
They did a good job of this because Marines historically, and somewhat to this day right now, besides people like Bobby G, as long as you don't interrupt their flow of ammunition, food, logistics,
they're good.
They just don't pay attention to
Space
what
Marines
you're doing.
At this stage, we're completely focused on chaos. They were all in a... every single Space Marine Legion has lost their Primarch because of chaos. That's the only reason that Primarchs are gone.
As long as you're not messing with their ability to beat the shit out of chaos...
They don't care.
And also, to be fair, first one of the day, the Marines also, while geniuses, have a hard time occasionally with understanding petty men's drives and desires. Because why? Because their entire doctrine of everything that they stand for, but this doesn't even make sense.
Where this gets ugly is because, and to exactly Brad's point, they're not suspicious of the Lords of Terra. And so what happens is the Lords of Terra kind of send all the Space Marines to the other side of the galaxy away from their spheres of influence because they don't want to deal with them. Which means as this orc invasion is progressing, the Space Marines aren't even aware of it because no one's saying them.
They're so far away.
Yeah. Well, because no one's saying the messages. Like, oh, hey, by the way, this is happening. They don't know. So the, But moving forward, the war, the Beast's Wah finally gets to a point where it's so massive that it can no longer be ignored, and it gets close enough to Terra that basically right up to the Segmentum Solar that now you have to do something about it. And two things happen. First, as we covered before, the head of the Assassins, so you can listen to our Assassins cast, gets involved and gets all the Lords of Terra to fall in line by, I think, killing one of them and then threatening a bunch of the others with his assassins. He
showed up to a meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a real thing.
Actually, it's pretty funny. So it's a good cast. Listen to our cast on the Assassins. We talk about this. This gets the commitment of the Imperial Navy and the Militarum. It also there then gets the notice of the Space Marine chapters, primarily the Imperial Fists, but they weren't the only ones. Space Wolves were there, Black Templar, Ultramarines, Blood Angels. Everyone joins the call.
Well, it becomes an everybody. It again.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, Sisters of Silence.
Yeah, it becomes an all hands on deck because it becomes so serious.
Yeah.
Because the orcs aren't just winning. They're smashing.
Yeah.
And they're also ruining logistics.
Yeah. And so what's during this War of the Beast, there's an Imperial Fist who is the current Chapter Master Korland. Korland was the Lord Commander of all Imperial forces. So that's why he went there first. And he's the head, he's also the head of the Imperial Fists. So he and the Fists take the brunt of the Beast.
He's supposed to be a brilliant strategist, but this initial move is terrible, by the way.
What, of just get between Orkwa?
He had no other plan. He starts to come up with some plans, but his original plan was just let him, use the Rocky. He'll get tired of punching me in the face because they get wrecked in the beginning. They get
absolutely wrecked. I mean, to the point where the Legion is potentially going to fall, like that level of wrecked. Korland at this point becomes a better strategist and realizes that they cannot defeat the Beast Wah head on. And I will defend him this one. This is the first time they've seen anything like this. When they fought the orcs on Ulanor, it was a very powerful, it wasn't even a war boss on Ulanor. But the Beast is a whole different ballgame. The Beast is the largest Wah up until the second time that Gaz shows up. I mean, they've never seen anything like this.
Duct taped head to that Gaz?
Yeah, well, that's the third time.
Oh, that's true.
The third time is the head duct taped on.
Onto multiple bodies.
So what Korland realizes is that they need to win small skirmishes all over the place to lead into a greater.
Let's say that why? Because the bigger the battle, the more orcs are drawn, the bigger the wall gets. But if you fight small skirmishes, it actually not only kills some of the orcs, but it decreases the wall because it deflates them because they've lost and it wasn't a big battle and nothing.
And so he focuses on these tiny little asset wins that maybe divert the orc horde in certain directions or impede some movements. The problem he has, though, is that there's no force within the Imperium that works this. The Imperial war machine has always been dominance. It has been throw giant numbers, arms, and just wreck.
Exactly. I was saying, no, we've never done that because our MO is you have bodies. So do we.
We have more bodies. They're better armored. They're better equipped, all this stuff. And the problem with the orcs.
I've read the Imperial Primer. I know they're better armed.
Exactly. Well, they know how to recite their proper litany. The issue, though, is that where this becomes a problem is the orcs outnumber them here 20 to 1, 30 to 1, 50 to 1. I mean, it's out of control.
There's so many.
And I'm saying they're outnumbering the guardsmen. It is not a good, you can't win the war this way. So he has to figure out something else. What he comes up with ends up becoming the Death Watch, where he realizes that he needs to make a new fighting force of small space marine groups who can go and win tiny battles.
With specific weaponry, though. That's the biggest thing. They're not only going to be different tactics, but they're going to be equipped to only specifically do these things.
Now, one thing, we're going to tell you two stories here back to back on the founding of the Death Watch. They're both in codexes, but not in the same codex. So this does get a little bit loopy.
Well,
so I'm going to tell you a story I like more, and then the other one.
I want to tell the one thing before we continue, though. This is a big deal because codex compliancy is a big deal. Space Marines fight a certain way and then adapt from here. This is them saying, we're scrapping that. We're going to make you unbelievably focused to only deal with this.
Yeah. So this story becomes interesting. The only way for Corlan to make a new Space Marine like chapter effectively is with the blessing of the Lords of Terra, who do not want to do this. And the reason they don't want to do it is because Space Marines were already operating independently of them. And this would technically increase the size of a military force that they have no control over. And these people care about nothing but control.
Personal power.
Yeah. Luckily, the War of the Beast is kind of an imminent concern. And I'm pretty sure the head of the Assassins got involved here. So they approve it. And the first kill teams.
They had to approve it because they screwed around so long that the war was outside. Yeah,
they could see the. But I also firmly believe the head of the Assassins was also saying, "Hey, sign this because I got someone behind you who's going to have an issue if you don't sign it.
Yeah,
and the next guy up will sign it.
Also, he'll be wearing your skin."
What's great is so this gets approved, and I love the original founding. You've got this situation where all these Space Marine chapters had been fighting against the Beast, and they've lost 75%+ of their soldiers. They are not battlefield ready at any because they operate these big groups. But these like 20-25% who are alive want nothing more than to get vengeance for their fallen brothers. So Corlan just floats this idea of hey, would anyone be willing to join a hodgepodge group of Marines to go fight the Xenos? And yeah, quite a few volunteers show up.
There's some grim anger coming out of here.
But don't forget, these are also the people who survived the fight against
these orcs.
So they have and as Brad and I have discussed before, Space Marines are light years intelligent. So every battle a Space Marine fights is knowledge they never forget. So what ends up happening is a cool side effect is these are some of the best orc fighters in the galaxy form small groups to go fight orcs.
Because now they figured out what works, what doesn't work, and they've got it burned into their brains because that's how they roll. Yeah.
After the War of the Beast, this then becomes not canonized, whatever it is. They become an official force, but this force ends up being moved under the Inquisition due to some protests from the Lords of Terra. But they end up becoming. But it actually does make sense. You put them under the Ordo Xenos because their goal is to fight Xenos. It just was a weird little thing. The funny thing about this to me, though, is that that's one of the two stories. The other one, so in 2010, we've got the first Death Watch Codex. In 2015, you get Black Library novels that tell the story we just covered
with
Corlan Newham. So now I'm going to tell you the 2010 version of it.
Which is lamer.
And it's...
Yeah, because they act like they just showed up almost.
The idea is this one is a bunch of Inquisitor lords got together to petition the Space Marine chapters to give them a fighting force to stand against a Xeno threat. And under this one, all of the heads of the Ordo Xenos went to all of the heads of the Space Marines and told them that they needed, basically they said, give us your best Space Marines so we can go fight with your best Space Marines. And the chapter masters agreed.
It's not as cool as multiple chapters wanting vengeance for their fallen brothers and come together with the best of the best of the veterans.
Exactly. So I'm just going to skip over the rest of it because I really don't I don't like that story.
You're fine.
And it's the older story. Effectively, the only thing that really comes out of these two stories I do think is important is I am still unclear as to the relationship between Ordo Xenos and the Inquisition. I'm still unclear between the relationship between Death Watch and the Ordo Xenos. And I say that because in the codexes and in the books, they work together, but it's very evident that the Inquisition cannot tell the Death Watch what to do.
They can, they just don't.
Maybe that's it. Okay, because it's like I'm going through on Eisenhorn, paper, I'm going through even codexes.
On paper, they do have the ability. The Death Watch just will ignore them.
Yeah, saying to a 9-foot man holding a frag cannon wearing power armor, go do what I told you to do.
I want you to tell the same thing would happen to you that happened to the biker in Secret Level. He will put his shoulder down and you will explode.
Yeah, fair enough. So let's go then into kind of, now that we've covered the Death Watch origin, let's talk about the structure of them because I love the Death Watch. I'm sorry, I really do.
The way they make new people or get new people is so different. This is, they're unique.
Yeah. So a key piece here. Every Space Marine chapter holds its roots in its gene seed. As we discussed before, it's a stupid waste of a program because you could easily just implant them with the Emperor's gene seed, but we'll skip that.
Or you could have always made them Primaris.
Yeah. Well, the Primaris has extra things, but anyway. The point being is that each Legion...
still get poisoned.
No limit to poisoning, Brett.
Apparently not.
There's no limit to poisoning. It just happens. They need gas masks. Anyway, the gene seed determines your chapter. Whatever chapter you're from, they put the gene seed in, and you've got a natural attachment to your Primarch. The Death Watch don't have a Primarch, so they have no gene seed. So as a result, the Death Watch become an amalgamation of chapters, which I love them so much for.
Did you pronounce that right, but you also spelled it right in our notes, and I don't understand how that happened.
I have spell check. You think I could spell amalgamation on one shot?
The amount of times you put the wildest stuff up here.
Yeah. I also work in dental, so amalgams, I mean, I can just spell instantly. I can amalgam. All right, like amalgam and then mation. All right, so a couple things on the Death Watch. Joining the Death Watch is not a permanent assignment. I mean, it is if you die, but if you don't die, you will eventually leave the Death Watch and return back. Again, Space Marine 2. So once you've, and this is a huge thing for people who return, going to the Death Watch is an amazing honor. We'll get to that in a second. So when you come back from the Death Watch, let's just say you weren't stationed on like, you know, a super happy, you weren't guarding Hawaii. You know, if you come back from Death Watch, you've killed more Xenos than most of your chapter brothers will ever even see.
You also get sent to some serious hot zones.
You can fight.
They don't call for the Death Watch to clean up.
Yeah, it's not like, hey, we could you guys help us out over here a little bit? It's like, hey, go. We're going to drop you into the middle of a Necron tomb, something they actually did, to fight your way to the center of it, which they did, to then kill, you know.
They get some whack assignments.
Well, their stories are awesome.
Also, they send them into, we don't know what this alien race does, kill them.
Yeah.
And you're like, so absolutely no intel? Nah.
No, you'll figure it out.
You're good. Yeah, you kill Xenos.
Second Eisenhorn novel or third Eisenhorn novel is the one where they do that. It's the second or the third where, they're fighting an alien race that no one has ever seen before in the Death Watch. They're going,
all right. They just YOLO them in.
Yeah, whatever. Next problem. So another key part of the Death Watch, though, is that they are not centralized. So
this is a huge deal.
This is so cool. This is actually one of the coolest things to me about them. The galaxy's massive, and like we said, they're not just fighting the codexed, you know, aliens.
But also
there's aliens everywhere.
It goes to the size of that, though. Okay. They never tell you exactly how big the Death Watch is, but you start to figure out, wait a minute, they're doing things.
GW math. There technically should be more Death Watch than there are Space Marines.
Yeah, because they are everywhere. Yeah. They get drawn from all the chapters, and they also operate independent of the Codex Astartes, so they can have whatever the hell they want.
But the way the Death Watch are set up is they're on these watch fortresses, which we'll cover more in the next cast, and actually watch, another term for them too, watch stations all around the galaxy. And this is done because they have to be able to deploy real fast. They have a centralized base, but overall, these small spots all around the galaxy are so that if a Xenos threat is detected, they can be there basically in an instant. This is very different than as we talked about in the last cast with the Space Wolves. They have just the base on Fenris. You know, I think Fists, a couple of them might have more than one base. Obviously, the Ultramarines have the entire...
I think you meant to say the Fang.
The Fang, fine. But the Ultramarines have an entire system, but it's one system. If something's going on the other side of the galaxy, they have to warp travel the whole way there. The Death Watch have someone local. They've got they have a local
chapter. There's so many Death Watch. There should be. They're everywhere. Yeah.
So in each of these local areas have a Watch Commander. And I like the Watch Commander because he fits like a strange role within the Death Watch.
I love these guys, though, because they have good rules in the game.
No, Watchmasters are great.
Yeah, but I love the fact of what they are, though, because they're the guy that has to get everybody going now all the time.
And it is, woo. Let's say, talk about tabletop rules. yeah, the rules suck compared to what they should be.
Oh, yeah.
This is the, like, to become a Watchmaster means that you've been in the Death Watch for decades. Decades upon decades.
Also, no one has any idea how you're still alive.
Yeah, you basically should be a Watchmaster against a Custode in combat. The Custode still wins, but he has to sweat a little bit. Whereas a Custode versus Space Marine is a, oh yeah, that guy was there. Past tense.
Paste.
Past tense. Unless on the tabletop, said opponent is holding a las rifle.
He read the litany. Mm-hmm. Can't be stopped.
Yeah, can't be stopped.
Or your vehicles blow up.
Yeah.
God, I'm so mad about that still.
Yeah. All right. So no, I'm not going to tell the story about playing this weekend.
What? Are you blowing up my stuff? My me blowing up your stuff?
Yeah. Brad and I played this weekend and I took out a chunk of his army with an exploding Rogal Dorn.
Yeah. But you kept blowing up.
Yeah.
You act like one thing blew up.
Man, yeah, the Imperium doesn't build stuff well.
I didn't realize that all of your reactors were set to explode.
Yeah. I blew up one Lehman Russ, one Rogal Dorn, one Sentinel,
one Basilisk.
One Basilisk. That's all. It's not much. Like, I probably did about 70 mortal wounds to you on explosions. You're upset about this. I don't know. You should have planned better.
I should have punched you with just the right amount of force.
You should have been careful. Also, watch out for Overwatch. It can sting.
Yeah.
Especially with Meltas. Anyway.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So the greatest thing though about the Watchmaster is because he falls into all the pieces of Death Watch. When you join the Death Watch, you reset your rank. You could be a captain and join the Death Watch. Doesn't matter. You're joining a kill team, and you have to refight your way all the way up. And this is done not because of some weird, like, you're new here, so you have to start from the bottom. It really is a look. We fight differently than you fought before. You're going to learn your way up.
Well, so. It's not just ranking back up. It's they want to find what you're specifically good at.
Absolute best at, because we're going to specialize.
Right. Because this, you're already sending the best of the best here. We want to know if we take the best of the best and we figure out their specialty, that's where we're putting them in. And they have kill teams, which we're going to into in a minute.
Kill teams in a minute. But what the idea is that every member of the Death Watch is, as you move further and further up, you have your kill teams, you have your veterans, you have your Watchmaster. Each level up, they get astronomically better. And they have to be, because of what we just were discussing earlier. These guys operate independently. They move very quickly. When it's go time, they are absolute go time. They don't have a giant bunch of support behind them. The way it's going to work is the local Inquisition is basically scouring the galaxy for problems. They're going to find a problem. They're going to decide quickly what needs to be done. Is this a local, you know, planetary defense force situation? Maybe a little bit of guardsmen? Or am I really up, you know, a river without a paddle? In which case, we're calling in the Death Watch. And if you want to better read these, I believe it's the second Eisenhorn novel, when he's dealing with an alien race there. Oh, it might be the first one, actually, when I think about it.
They touch it. It's both.
Yeah, but anyway, but the Death Watch are present there.
But also,
they come in.
People ask us for recommendations. They've been asking a lot in Discord lately. You're never going to go wrong with the Eisenhorn novels. They're good.
Yes, I think it's the best one. I like Gaunt's a lot, but I think Eisenhorn's the best.
I've listened to, on audiobook-wise, I've listened to Eisenhorn a bunch. Yeah.
The only downside to the Eisenhorn audiobook is that you listen to them. What's the writer's name who did all the Eisenhorn
Abbott
books? Abbott uses the same guy for all of his audiobooks. So you can, the next one in, you're like, oh, but that was Eisenhorn's voice.
Yeah.
Like, oh. Anyway, let's go now talk about joining the Death Watch, because again, cool as shit. We'll start with the Codex way you join, and then we'll get into the Space Marine 2 way that you join. They don't really cover this as much in the codexes, but they've kind of added it later. So we'll start with the original, which is the Death Watch are not a secret organization. Whereas, like, the Grey Knights, only certain members are aware of them.
No. Everybody knows about the Death
Watch. Every Space Marine, even the members of the Imperium, the Death Watch are well known, which makes sense because the Xenos aren't really a secret. Ordo Malleus is holding a secret. Ordo Xenos is like...
I have to assume that there's like some sort of like Stallone and Arnold movies that are Death Watch movies.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Because they're everywhere.
Yeah. Within the Space Marines, as we were discussing, the Death Watch are viewed as the elite. They are a special force. So everyone kind of wants to be in the Death Watch. Joining the Death. So effectively, every single Space Marine, whether they say it or haven't said it, are volunteering to being part of the Death Watch.
It's a huge honor.
However, you can't volunteer for the Death Watch. You have to be volunteered into it. And this is because Space Marines by nature are stoic. You know, Space Wolves, we give them a bit of a grief about glory and action, but it's still done with class. No Space Marine would ever demand, I want to be in the Death Watch.
Lucius.
But Lucius would. Lucius would. But aside from Lucius.
He did fall to chaos. So.
Yeah, that's fair. He still likes killing Xenos.
He was such a douche.
But I want to, because I do want to talk about this a little bit in the sense of like this whole idea of honor and stoicism. Because Space Wolves, we did kind of make them out to be a little bit like kind of borderline chaosy with some of
they're awesome. Just right. Accept it and move on.
But I want to clarify. They're not, the Space Wolves are not so prideful that they would kind of be part of Emperor's Children. The Space Wolves take pride in the honorable way that they do things. A Space Wolf, you know, does he want the final kill and the biggest boss?
Oh yeah.
Yes. But would he do anything nefarious to get it? Absolutely not.
He would also not try to ruin the victory, period. Yeah.
And so what happens is with the Death Watch is everyone wants to be in the Death Watch, but they're not going to overly ever demand to be in it. So the question is, how do you get someone into the Death Watch? You join the Death Watch by being recommended to it. But it's a process. It's a really cool process of recommendation. It starts with either your lieutenant or your captain seeing a Marine who just excels in combat against Xenos. So fighting Xenos is step one. They then take that recommendation and they actually go to the chapter master and say, I believe Space Marine Ted, I wish they'd name him that instead of some weird Latin.
It's funny because Ted then has to go through a physical.
Yeah.
You're like, hey man, I'm already a Marine. You're like, yeah, but.
But, and the physical's done by the apothecary. And it's actually kind of cool because I didn't realize this till you're reading about Death Watch. You do get variances in physical ability within Space Marines. They are, some are bigger, some are stronger, some are faster. So in order-
One of the biggest things is they want the guys that heal the fastest. That is one of the biggest things.
Yeah, who heals the best. They basically do an NFL combine. Sorry for those of you who aren't in the US. for these guys to figure out, all right, yes, you're good at killing Xenos, but are you also the peak of physicality? But that's not the cool one. The cool one to me is once your captain and lieutenant has signed off and the apothecary has signed off, the next one they send you to is your chaplain. And the chaplain's doing a few really important things. First off, weighing the strength of your character and your soul, because you're going to be faced with overwhelming odds constantly against genuine horrors of the galaxy. You will fight in slavery. It's decently possible you will fight in slavery.
And the thing is you also fight against something that maybe no one has ever seen.
Yep.
So it's not even like you can fall back on your teachings,
yeah,
which is a big thing because a lot of these horrors are just, yes, is it something unbelievable that my mind is going to melt? But you've been taught about it.
Because being a Death Watch, yes, you have to be really good at following orders, but you can't be an automaton. You have to be able to say, all right, we're dropping you off in point A, Bear Grylls style. We're dropping you off in point A. You have to get to point B. Well, what's between those two? Not good things.
Stuff.
Yeah, a lot of horror. How do I get there? Just get there.
Yeah. Also, figure out how to take care of the thing that's stopping you.
Yeah. The other one, though, which is why I really like that the chaplain has to be there, is the chaplain's also testing the metal of your ability to keep a secret.
Which is so crazy because every Space Marine chapter has stuff they don't want others to know.
Let's say there's levels to that. There's the Dark Angels, Blood Angels, and even the Space Wolves secret is not as bad as those two secret, you know, keep a secret. And then there's the Imperial Fist keep a secret, which is what?
Like sometimes we eat second breakfast.
Exactly. Like it's really not that big of a deal, but they all have to be able to keep absolute secrets. The irony, and we'll cover this later, is that the Death Watch does the same thing to them when they leave. So that's an important piece. You have to go into the Death Watch with a ton of secrets, God. And then you come out of the Death Watch.
Tell them there's a real chance that the Dark Angels would show up.
The Dark Angels would absolutely want to go to war with the Death Watch if they were like, you're doing what?
So much heresy.
What weapons are you using? It's not important. I'm sorry.
They work so well.
No, they're incredible. So that being said, though, if the chaplain does give the final check mark, then the chapter master makes the final determination. And, you know, they usually do, obviously. What I like is that the chapter master makes the determination. The Marine may not know that they're in the Death Watch for like a year because they have to go find them, pull them off assignment, and then send them over. That, though, is half of the story. I would say for the army I'm building, that's about 2/3 of the story. The remaining third are the Black Shields, who I like so much more than the regular ones.
For whatever reason, I just decided to forget those guys existed for a minute. Yeah. And they are cool as shit.
The Black Shields are even more badass to me. So the Black Shields, and again, Space Marine 2 covers this pretty well, are people who join the Death Watch not out of honor or pride, but out of redemption. So these are people who, for whatever reason, have gained the eye of suspicion of the Imperium. And unlike penitent engines or other such options, these people are able to then, they're allowed to join the Death Watch. The most common scenario of this actually are successor chapters that still fall to chaos. It happens, the common story. And when that happens, not all of them fall. You'll have, you know, a small handful who will stand out.
But if your chapter falls, doesn't matter. You exactly. are still tainted.
You're tainted. So these are the most common ones to join because these are Space Marines who oftentimes killed their chapter brothers because they'd fallen into chaos. They're standing and everything about them says, this is a loyal servant of the Emperor, but what are we going to do about it? So what they do is they join as Black Shields. And this, by the way, for those of you who played Space Marine 2, this is the backstory for Titus. He fought against chaos, was deemed to have too much contact with the warp in that fight, and no one trusted him, so he became a Black Shield.
Which also was so trash for Titus because that dude has had nothing go right for him.
Yeah.
Ever. And he's always been fighting against it. And they were like, yeah, we don't trust you.
You fight against it a little bit too much.
Yeah. You're like, I've had nothing but shit happen to me. And I've been wrecking it from day one.
So these ones are called Black Shields. And the way you can tell if someone has painted their army is you'll have on the one shoulder, you'll have the Death Watch kind of silver. And on the other shoulder, they'll have their normal chapter color. If there's no chapter color on that other one, they either are painting quickly and didn't want to deal with it, or they're a black shield. It's either way.
Which so, also 75% of Death Watch armies are only Black Shields, apparently.
I know. It's something where I'm building it from scratch and I have a lore podcast. So I'm much more handcuffed.
We will definitely give you some shit.
Yeah, I'm much more handcuffed on my the ability for me to build armies. Just being honest. So once you join the Death Watch, what happens? As we said before, you lose all rank or title because you're not organized by that. You may have been a Space Wolf, you may have been an Ultramarine. Doesn't matter. You are now.
Well, it's also important because they don't have companies.
Mm-hmm.
The Death Watch is not organized into companies. So it's not like Scout Company, First Companies, Terminators, you know, so on and so forth. Death Watch has
So yeah, you're more often than not, you're going to be sent to your random fortress somewhere in the galaxy. Some guys go to the main headquarters, but still, random fortress in the galaxy. And then you just get going. So upon arriving at the base, the Marine embarks on what is basically neophyte training all over again, because they are a new recruit. They know how to fight, but they know how to fight Xenos as well. So they go on a horrifying course of Xeno technology, and not the Imperial Primer one where all the Xenos are weak and pathetic, but like the real one about this is how you can do, here's all the
tricks. They also have some of those weapons there.
It does help. It does help.
They show you what they're going to be, what they look like, how they function.
Well, they've got some of the Xenos there. They're dead. I'm assuming there's a very fun taxidermist who works somewhere within the Death Watch. He's just stuffing a Necron.
It's a big deal, though, because you know exactly what that weapon does. Mm-hmm. Because that is a Marine problem because of heresy. You know, you can't have them. These guys have the weapon there, so you can go, this is how you get around this. This will do this, as opposed to going, oh, Timmy just got hit in the face by a web spinner. We should probably know what that does before I get hit in the face.
Well, and that's what I love about this. By the time they are coming out of their training, they can identify a Xenos in an instant, not just by the Xenos, but even the weapon that the Xenos is using. And because, again, these are space marines, they're incredible super soldiers, they can also fully recall all the tricks and tactics that work against them. Like, you know, hitting a Tau with a blunt object. That'll work. It's all you really need. So I will say, quick call out to 8th edition, because maybe the best version of Death Watch that ever existed sucked as a Xeno player. And I say that as someone who played Xenos and did not play Death Watch in 8th edition. And even I'll admit, look, this sucked, but it was cool as hell.
Turning off your abilities, wounding rerollable twos.
Yeah, so the Death Watch had abilities in 8th edition to make it so that the Necrons couldn't reanimate. Green Tide wouldn't work. The orcs would just flee, basically, in front of them.
Yeah, Tyranids would just...
They would just kill Hive Tyrants with a
because
pistol.
You're monstrous. These things that would normally get wounded on the game on a D6, on a 6, got wounded on a 2.
Yeah, on a 2 with high damage.
Yes.
Yeah, it was awesome. They would turn... They jacked up Eldar. It was saying they had these goofy ways they could just shut everything down.
They could blow up Psykers.
That's right. Yeah, they could auto-kill Psykers effectively. Yeah, it was really cool. 8th edition really mastered what the Death Watch were. And then people really complained. Like, there were some tournaments that it was basically, just to be honest with how bad these rules were. If you played, and I remember playing Tyranids at this point. If I was a Tyranid player and I pulled a Death Watch match, unless my opponent was the dumbest, worst player who's ever existed, I basically auto-lost the game.
The problem was, and I think this is not the problem, I'm going to give my quick 2 cents on
this.
I love that shit, though.
It's awesome.
Because they also had zero abilities that worked against not Xenos.
Oh, yeah. They fought a Chaos army, and this is when Chaos was bad. Chaos would just go, oh, so you just can't do anything to me?
Like, none of your weapons work against me.
Yeah. No, not really. All right. So I'm just going to go, I guess I'll move up the board and win.
Yeah. You're like, if you were, you sure you don't want to be Xenos?
Yeah, exactly. Can you change? You sure you're not a Xenos? Anyway. So the other part, though, that's actually probably more interesting from a lore standpoint is the way they wage war is totally different. As I said before, the Space Marines specialize in large-scale combat. Layering offenses to destroy their opponents. So when we got doctrines for Space Marines, you start your Devastator doctrine. So you pound the enemy from a distance. Then you move into your Tactical doctrine, where you're using kind of more small arms to fight them and get closer. And then you finally finish them off with your Assault doctrine. And you move this way. The Death Watch don't fight like that. They use kill
teams. At all.
Yeah, and these little kill teams engage all over the place. And the difference is each kill team is a hodgepodge of all of those pieces. Heavy weapons, combat, small arms.
Yeah, but the kill teams themselves are very specialized for what they're trying to do.
Yes, I know, but I'm talking about the weaponry they carry. The kill team itself is designed to be, I can drop this kill team somewhere, and whatever's between it and where it has to be, it has at least one to two dudes who can handle that thing.
Sure, but they're in that thing, though. They're still... What are we going to face here?
Yeah, it's strategic. It's not a complete hodgepodge. It'd be impossible.
Because there's going to be a big difference between an Indomitor team and a Fortis team, where they're going.
Yeah, whereas in the current version, you can play them, and thanks to the Index, it's been out for like a month, I can have Melta and Aggressors and Heavy Interceptors. True. So it's like, I'm handling big stuff, but it's that piece
and
of
for, help. And how we're jumping, we're not giving enough. Say, what we're saying is you can put together guys that have anti-tank weapons with guys that have
heavy armor and anti, but nothing, but you wouldn't, you're not putting together a melee guy and a las cannon.
Right.
So actually, screw it. Let's talk about kill teams. Cause actually this is where we're going to. So as we said, from the War of the Beast, the kill teams is where they, as we said before, the War of the Beast was the origin of the kill teams, and it was quintessential to how they were going to fight their battles. And these original groups, where this came from, was actually an accident. When Courland was first forming the first kill teams, as we said, these were made of groups who just been decimated. So like, there's like three guys left, one guy left of a squad, right? And I'm shoving him with this other squad over there. And
you're just trying to put together the most effective of what's left. And then you started coming up with the basis for kill teams. It was a necessity of what do we have? What, you know, what goes together out of the, what is actually.
What I love about this is it was done again, obviously I'm, as we found out on the Taucast, I'm a massive fan of XCOM, but it's also D&D is the same thing. I love parties. Like I love the old TSSR, the old gold box D&D games.
Gold box games were awesome. They were
the best. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, Google it. And if you're under the age of 20, you're going
to
hate.
I was just about to say it's 35 years ago.
Yeah, 35 years ago, it was written for, I mean, these were floppy disk games. I'll admit the graphics aren't the best.
There's not graphics.
It's 2D. It's a 2D graphic. But they loved it because you would build a party. And the idea is that anyone who plays a lot of time, you get your magic user. You get your cleric, you get your warrior, maybe you get an archer, maybe do another war, however it's set up. That's what these kill teams originally were. You got a guy who's got more of a heavy weapon. Then you've got a guy who's got maybe a lighter weapon, someone who's stealthy, et cetera, et cetera. Gaunt's Ghost actually fall in this category too. It's why the reason why those books are good. And the idea here is that the kill teams were able with this to be very effective in saying the small areas where they wouldn't draw a lot of attention, but they would achieve a lot of stuff.
I love kill teams. You know what? I'm going to let John go off in a little bit on the kill teams here, but I love the idea of kill teams, these specialized teams. Okay, I'll let John go as soon as I never stop talking. I love the idea of these kill teams being specific, focused roles that came from just the necessity of what's left and what we can do with them.
And what they, and this is where I fanboy on this so hard, because these space marines function in squads, but usually the space marine squads, they're all kind of the same. Every squad is, okay, this is, these are hellblasters. Everyone's holding a plasma gun. No, Death Watch went, no, we don't need 10 plasma guns. Because when you play the game, you end up overkilling with it. More often than that, you actually have too many of one gun than you actually need. With Death Watch, they went, no, this is how many we're going to need. And also, we're all the best of the best. So we know the guy holding the plasma gun is the best plasma gun guy we have. And it will not blow up in his face, in theory.
In theory. Let's talk about one of my favorite things about this, which is they're the only Imperium period in the game units that combine armor types.
Yeah. And that's, well, all right.
I mean, that's a big thing, though.
Let's talk about this to a point. Yes. So the cool thing about them is it does make sense. You will actually have Gravis armor, which is Primaris Terminator armor, with standard Primaris armor, with some other armors. Now, we should call out that the laws of physics got a little bit messed up at one point, because I could have a squad that had a biker in it.
That drove through a wall.
That drove through a wall. And was able to move at twice the speed of everyone else in the thing, but everyone else just ran faster because he was there.
As long as they were close enough to him.
Yeah, they've had some interesting rules, or like, hey, this squad can suddenly drop out of the sky because there's one dude with a jump pack in it.
And everybody else doesn't. And they're like,
yeah, no one else has a jump pack. I guess they were holding on.
Yeah, everybody's holding his feet.
Yeah, exactly, as he flies.
I hope that's around. A good jump pack, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we are being dropped from low orbit.
Yeah, you're kind of low orbit, and one of the five of us has a jetpack. Yeah.
And I'm an aggressor. I'm like, yeah, and I'm falling quite quickly.
Yeah. I weigh more than the guy with the jetpack. So some of these things, mistakes were made. This has been cleaned up in more of the modern era by just them not allowed, being allowed to have bikes.
But these guys are cool. If you think about it, though, you know, whether you like it or not.
Outside of that bit, it was a really cool idea.
They're like the Expendables, man.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what makes them so cool to be on the tabletop, because it's at peace. Why do I have an aggressor with double flame gauntlets sitting here helping me out? Well, because I need the meat guy to go through the wall and burn all the genes to their cults.
But I don't, because I'm also with three other guys that have anti-tank weapons that blow up the thing.
Yeah.
Then the guys with the flamers.
Burned up. I mean, that's what Brad said is a great example of how they work in the lore. You're right. The guys with the Melta guns will then blow open the piece of armor, whatever it is, the Falcon. And then as the fire dragons start pouring out of it, the aggressors are right there to flame it to death. And this is all done within one squad. Obviously, you can't do that's not the sequence of operation on the tabletop, but that's not important. I'm going lore. So in the lore, they're freaking awesome. This and the stories they have of some of these kill teams in action are it's everything I've ever wanted to do in D&D campaigns. That's why this is why I love them so much. That being said, with all the pieces, we've talked a lot about the warriors. There are other people who join the Death Watch. You do have armors, apothecaries, chaplains. I have no idea how you become a Death Watch chaplain, by the way. That one's just given how you become a Death Watch, it's like, okay, the Space Marine makes sense. The apothecary, probably really good at healing Xeno weapons. Got it. The armorer, we know that that's just the best armor because you're going to go work with the fun toys. The chaplain?
Ooh. We also have talked about one of the Death Watch armors.
They're extremely good.
They might be, and I'm not gonna, there's a couple chapters that have some pretty damn good artificers.
They do.
But Death Watch, well, they're definitely the best at working with shit that you're not supposed to work with because they're the only people working with it. But these guys have incorporated Xeno's technology into Imperium weapons that only the Death Watch uses. I wanted to point that out because I do think
we'll cover that more than next.
Yeah, I'm just saying each team's showing up with stuff that other people don't have access to.
So, as we were discussing, the space you join the Death Watch, you join this kill team, and you're in this massive kind of education program. The thing I love about the Death Watch is that you do it as part of your kill team. So you arrive, you get sent to your barracks, you go to your bunk, and everyone else in that room, that's your kill team. And these guys work together the entire time they're training. This goes back to the story we were just telling. They not only are they masters of whatever weapon they have, they also master what everyone else in the squad does. They know everyone's speed, everyone's movement, everyone's everything.
Where you're going to be. Yeah. I love that. I love in the lore, Death Watch is pretty cool on the board. But in the lore, I love the fact that they are definitely synergizing. They're way more
pure movie style combat where like one guy, you know, the guy's shooting and his buddy comes in front of him. He stops shooting for that little second and picks up as soon as his buddy clears. So they're almost impossible to fight against because it's the idea of 10 men feel like 100 style.
Well, it's a big deal too. Also a lot of, and this is why they're so good versus Tyranids, for instance, because the hive mind learns how Marines fight. And then Death Watch shows up and completely flips that. It's got to make no sense to the Hive Tyrant, by the way.
Yeah, Hive Tyrant's just like well, you know, the Hive Tyrant's used to, okay, there's Marines here. Let's let them be there because when the full force arrives, we'll fight them. And you know, the full force is those eight dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's lost.
It's obviously, if they've got heavy weapons, then we'll just attack them.
Yeah.
If they've got hand-to-hand weapons, they don't have anything to deal with this armor, and they have everything to do with everything.
And this is actually a key part of the Death Watch. Candidly, I'm building a Death Watch army. I won't play them very much on the tabletop because on the tabletop, they don't play anywhere as near as cool as the other lore.
I wish they could shoot. I wish Death Watch had you could fire half, then fire half again.
Yeah, that's why the Death Watch, because this is the biggest thing about Death Watch. The Death Watch should be, they come in, the kill team goes. They actually make more sense in the game kill team. Than they do
100% on the team. Well, Kid Team has individual activations for each and every guy.
And that's where they excel in that.
Yeah. Kill Team Death Watch is on. Yeah. Ooh, they're amazing.
But also in the lore, they've got way more skills. So we're talking about a tabletop game where, okay, this guy's got a plasma gun, this guy has a bolter, this guy has a heavy bolter, this guy's this. In the lore, this guy is a master of stealth. This guy can hack. This guy has language decryption. This guy is an explosives expert. And they come through, and this is how, in the lore, they just fight through almost anything. Because again, it's more story. They really do nail some of these stories. And as you guys can hear me fanboying a lot, it's because in my mind, in the lore, I think they're the best example of what I believe a Space Marine should be. I find a lot of the Space Marine lore to be, you know, just large scale combat, everyone shooting everybody.
Which Guard does better?
Yeah, the Death Watch stories are better. The Death Watch stories are like, no, these super soldiers get to be super soldiers.
They get to be super soldiers, and they also get to use all of their... I do like a lot of the Death Watch stories because you get them being super smart also. Yeah,
that's exactly... I keep using this phrase over again. Point A, point B. The Death Watch are given a... You have to... I mean, it's actually... Or video game-esque. You have to go achieve this objective. It is over there. We're going to put you right here. How do I get there? Figure it out. We've never been there before. There's, you know, in video gaming, it's having to go from one point of the map to the other point of that, but you don't have a map. Well, you have to find your way there.
Death Watch make way more sense than anybody else in the games, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. So they are...
To be fair.
They are absolutely kick-ass, and I love them. And actually, you know, this is actually a good spot to break because of where we're going to go in the next.
I'm thinking about that. Death Watch play better in video games than they do on the tabletop.
Yeah.
Not even close, also.
Yeah. That's where they belong. They belong in a video game setting. They belong in a D&D setting.
Yeah.
It's because
100%.
Because they do have to hack. They have the Death Watch, for example, would be sent in to go and disable. Like, they're who you would send to disable enemy in placement.
I mean, that's one of the best.
That's
stories.
What they would do.
They did Independence Day to Necrons in the monolith.
Oh, that story. We're going to do that story next time. That is one of my favorite stories that they did.
They went in and they ruined the place and took off.
But it is that piece of, like, if you're sitting there, you got an invasion, and for whatever reason, you've got orbital guns that are shooting up at you. The Death Watch are the ones you'd send down there to disable the orbital guns. And not because the truth is, I could try and blow it up from space, but I can't. So the Death Watch are the ones who will have to infiltrate, you know, the facility, fight their way to it, and blow the gun up from the inside, a la Star Wars. At a name your cool movie, it's the Death Watch who would do that. Everyone else is Saving Private Ryan.
I mean, they're totally the Expendables.
Yeah, but I just... hate that movie. So
I know, but that is 100% what they are.
That's why everything we made the reference, I've just given you silence as a result of it, because it's a
you know terrible. It's so apt, though.
Yeah, I just don't want it to be.
I mean, sure, but no. It's totally accurate.
It's Predator. Because it's way better, minus the losing to the Predator thing.
Yeah, I was just about to say, the one Predator, two
but
of them
the
up pretty
bad. Around, think about it. You've got Jesse the Body Ventura with his minigun for no
reason. Fine. Yeah. You know what you're going to do?
Whatever the dude was with a knife who was Native American.
You know what you're going to be with it?
Pseudo-racist.
You're going to be, he's a crazy person, by the way, in real life. Instead of Predator, you should go with Ocean's 11 then.
No combat in Ocean's 11.
They punched like one guy.
I guess that.
Or maybe they got punched. Either way.
But this again is why I fanboy so hard on Death Watch, because tabletop, they've had some fun rules, and we'll cover some more of them in the next episode about, good God, some of those armor. Oh, I'm going to shoot you with Hellfire rounds. I'll just pick my models up. So anyway, we hope today was informative and fun, and that you'll join us next week for more on Death Watch. Until then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you then.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, My husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.